Alan Quinn Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3, for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 16, delivered on March 29, 2017. The title of this lecture is Applications of Decision-Making Criteria.
Today, Applications of Decision-Making Criteria. Now, this is just an extension of what I did last time. I'm going to show you different calculators, the TI and the Pearson calculator, how you do NPVs, IRRs, and then I'm going to also show you how we deal. Okay. One thing that can drive a person crazy, especially if you're younger or if you've had to live through a lot of technological change, is when people can't let go of an old method. There's sometimes when you really shouldn't just throw over the old and just grab something that's new before it's tried and tested. Good example of that, have any of you driven down the road and had LED lights blind you? Yeah, you know, the technology, they just had to get the technology into use before it was ready. But on the other hand, sometimes it's time for technology to let go and go away. And in the world of finance and in decision making, as I said, the superior method is the net present value. However, the internal rate of return method is so ensconced, if for lack of a better big word, so embedded in the thinking of MBA types and business types from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s that we can't shake it out. Even though it is clearly flawed, and even though it will get you wrong answers if you have a sign switch more than once, they hang on to it. And in fact, even when it became clear that the IRR was not a good method, instead of just saying, we're not going to use it anymore, we're not going to teach it anymore, by heaven, they came up with a way that you could modify the internal rate of return so it still worked, you know, in a pig's eye, it still worked, even when you had assigned switches more than once in the cash flow. But before I get too far into that, Barrett, give me a moment here while let me turn down some house lights here. I'm just going to give you a couple of, maybe one problem, and show you how, again, you saw me do this with a Pearson calculator. I'm going to do it again with a Pearson, but I'm also going to do it with a TI calculator. I'm going to pull up, first I'll do it with the Pearson calculator, and I'm going to write down some numbers here. Hope that you can read them here. I scratched these out before I came to class here. Okay. Period in cash flow, period zero. We're going to have a project that you spend 90 grand on to start. And then period one, two, this is going to be a 6-year? Yeah. 6-year project, and it's going to be 10 grand, 20 grand, 25 grand, 10 grand, 20 grand, 25 grand in years one, two, and three, respectively. And then 30 grand, 20 grand. And then it dies pretty quickly. It has a salvage value of the parts of $1,000. Now I want to bring up something here. I'm doing this problem like this on purpose. projects that have a longer life, there's a downside to a long life project in that the stuff that you used loses value. I'm not talking about in accounting terms, depreciation in accounting sense. I'm talking about economic depreciation takes hold more and more as the life of a project goes on. So a 2 or 3 year, 4 year project, once you were finished with it, it would stop really producing much for you. You can get rid of the technology, the equipment, whatever, for a decent price. There's someone out there who will buy it. But in a project like this, and the reason I set this one up like this, is you can see that this project was actually pumping pretty darn well, clear to year 5, and then it just dies at year 6 with $3,000 in its last year. But by then, you got $1,000. That's it. That's all the project is worth. So along the way, there's another thing. If you took another class from me, we sometimes have to make a decision on when the what we used to call optimal kill on a project. When does a project, it's still pushing out money, but you have to start thinking about, okay, there's a balance. It could, notice here that it might, and that's not for this class, that would be for another class you take from me, it might have been a better idea to just not go year 6 and sell off the equipment, give up the $3,000 that it could have produced in year 6, and maybe it would have had a better salvage value at year if you had killed the project. So that's what I mean by optimal kill. In this case, we just let this project naturally die, and it pushed out a little bit of money in year 6. But by then, this equipment, we could sell it for $1,000. That's it. Maybe if we had quit in year 5 and just said, kill it now while it's still a really great project, that might have been a better idea. You'll see sometimes companies actually do this. Why? That product was still pretty good. Why did you kill it? Well, they knew that if they pushed it one more year, two more years, it was just going to lose all of its luster. And sometimes it's better to sell something before it loses its luster. Okay, now. What is that weird-ass thing up there in the corner? You see that? It's in the projector? It has. I didn't know. I would have known. Oh, that's weird. That's going to really annoy the hell out of me. Oh, and that covered it up. That's really strange. Okay. Anyway, now, always with the Pearson calculator, and this is free, of course. And don't feel obligated, for God's sake, to use the formula approach that they keep showing you in the book or in how do I work out this problem. Just use the calculator and get it done faster. But first things first, always with any problem, but especially with cash flow problems, hit reset. That just clears the registry stack, the whole stack is just wiped clean of information. And then you always, for a problem that has cash flows, you hit the CF cash flow button. And then you just start honking it along here. We're going to go with this project. We had negative $90,000, $90,000, posneg. And then you just go down and $10,000. Down, that had a frequency of 1 time, C2 was 20,000. Down, that had a frequency of 1. C3 had 25,000. Down, frequency of 1. And then $30,000. Down, frequency of 1. Try that again. And then $20,000 down with a frequency of 1. And then your last year, you had a total in there of $4,000. Always just add the salvage value to your last year's cash flow down with a frequency of 1. Now we're going to go with the internal rate of return, the I over Y. And for this one, we're going to start with, we're going to do a discount rate. Of 8.0%. And we put in 8.0 I over Y. And now we compute the net present value. -$5,564. $5,564.92. Now, based on the scale of this, in other words, what we have found out here is that if discount rate is on the horizontal axis and NPV is on the vertical axis, we see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And 5% right there. So 8. Okay, now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Right there. Around there. Now, here's where you begin to... First, it's kind of hard to see. First of all, where is the NPV? Can you tell? Is it to the upside of 8%? I'm sorry, where is the internal rate of return? Is it above 8% or below 8%? Yeah, don't be quiet. Yeah, it's below, man. Can't you see that? You're supposed to be the professor. That's what you say to me. It's below. It's clearly the NPV profile is downward sloping, so it's got to be in here somewhere. Now, the next question is harder. Is it very much below 8% or only a little below 8%? In a case like this, how would you know? Well, actually, I know that it's probably not terribly far below 8% because the scale of these cash flows was pretty large. And so a negative net present value of $5,500, isn't that too far off? I can't tell you, but I'd be a little surprised. And I didn't do the IRR. I'll do that now. I don't know, maybe about 6.8, 7%, and I'm just taking a stab in the dark. But now we can find it, compute the internal rate of return. 5.9%. Missed. I was just testing you there. Okay, so the IRR, so there's the NPV right there. The IRR is 5.91%. So in other words, right there. Yeah, that still is a pretty steep. That is actually still pretty steep. So in other words, this project would be a positive, it would be a go. If your company had a hurdle rate of, let's say, 5% for new projects, this project would be a go because at 5%, it's still positive. If this company had a hurdle rate of 6%, this project would be a no. Anything above the internal rate of return, any hurdle rate above the IRR, the project is rejected. Anything below, it's accepted. So in this case, this is a negative net present value project at 8%. It's a negative net present, it's a positive net present value at any discount rate below 5.91%. Now, without further ado, let me take you over here and pull up a TI-83. And I'm going to show you how you do this on the TI-83. It's actually no harder than it is on the Pearson. And the thing is that the Texas Instruments calculator is a scientific, so it's more flexible. So we turn it on, and then we go apps, finance. Now, notice down here, NPV and internal rate of return are respectively 7 and 8 in the finance apps. So we can do 7, or you can scroll down and hit enter, or you can just key in 7. And you come back to the main screen, and it's NPV. Now, the way this works, sweet Lord, it's been a while. You put in the rate first as a decimal. That's where I'm stopping. I'm pretty sure you put it in as a decimal. Now you hit the comma. Am I that, is it that hard for me to see? Where's the comma? Oh. Really? I just don't get old. Put yourself in a home like they should have done with me. Okay, now. The next thing you're going to do is you're going to put in the negative cash flow. In this case, negative 90 grand. Was it 90 grand? Yeah. Now here's the part it's a little bit, you just have to remember to do it. You key in the comma, and then the positive cash flow you put in braces. Open the braces. And then one after the other with the comma, you'll put in, now 10,000, comma, 20,000, comma, 25,000, comma, 30,000, comma, 20,000, comma, 4,000. I'm almost wondering, that doesn't look like the right number. It might be a little off. Okay, now close the braces. Second parenthesis, and then close the parenthesis. Okay, don't forget to do both of them, or it's going to look at you pig face error. You do that, and then you hit enter. Hang on here. Is it supposed to be the 0.08? Okay, wait. Second answer. No, I don't want to do that. Let me try something here. Oh, second enter. Second enter. Let me take it back up here. It's been so long, I've been using the Pearson for so long. Okay. Yeah, there it is. I'm sorry. It is with the actual, just write the percentage. It's just been so long since I've used this one. I keep teaching with this Pearson one. Okay, y'all good? Now, we're going to do a trick. Let's see if we can find the internal rate of return. Okay, now first I'm going to do it straight up, and then I'm going to show you how you can do it as a hat trick. Okay, so first things first here. Apps, finance. Now, going down, if you scroll down, you'll see, oh, there's internal rate of return, 8. And then you do the same thing, except you don't give it the 8%, because it will tell you the percentage it gets. You don't do a percentage with this one. All you do is put in the negative cash flow, which is 90,000, comma, and then you open the braces to put in the positive cash flows, which were 10 grand, comma, 20 grand, comma, 25 grand, comma, 30,000, comma, 20,000, comma, 4,000. And then you close the braces, and then you close the parentheses, and you hit enter. And you got it. Now, suppose I had said, find the internal rate of return, and then I said, now I want you to find the net present value. Well, what we can do is this. Edit, second enter. Now, go back up here, and the first thing you would want to do is go back, go up to IRR. Now, go back to your apps, finance, 7, and see how it switched it over to NPV? But now you're going to have to insert. My eyes are so bad. I can see it now. I'm sorry. And now we can put in the 8.0, comma. Look at that. See how I can switch back and forth if you want to do it that way. If you like to key in numbers, go for it. But you can go back and forth. If I had the NPV and I wanted to find the IRR, I would go up and set it back up to the NPV and then go apps, finance, IRR, and then go into the parentheses and delete the percentage in the comma, and I get the IRR. So you can do it either way. And in here it's just, it depends on what you want to do. The TI-83 is a physical calculator. You can carry it with you and do all these problems while you're sitting around. This is a virtual calculator, and you can get it, the app, the Pearson one, on Google Play. It's your call, whichever one you want to use. Now, realistically, if you're going to go into the world of finance, right now there's still a tendency to see these 83s or HP12Cs in the world of finance. But, more and more of these will start showing up more frequently. Okay. Now here comes. There are several different ways. I'm kind of grateful the book actually shows this, talks about this. And I want to give you a caution because, some of you are Excel animals. And the NPV function is NPV, and the IRR is IRR, obviously, so in Excel. I'm going to give you a warning. Don't let me forget to give you a warning about Excel. Well, as a matter of fact, I'll say it right now. You can actually calculate a problem very quickly in Excel. You just put in your periods, your cash flows, period after period after period, and then you just say equals NPV, highlight those. The warning in Excel is that if you have a year where there's a zero, no cash flow, don't leave it blank in Excel. You will get the wrong answer. Put in a zero. If it's a zero cash flow year, put in a zero. So if you've got a project that you put in $50,000 and you don't start getting positive cash, you don't start getting any cash flow until year 3, don't leave years 1 and 2 blank. Put in zeros for them. Because Excel, at least older versions of Excel, I don't know if they've corrected this in this latest version, they'll give you a wrong answer on that one. Okay, now, let me give you a problem. And I can't really promise you that I even know the answer to this one. Okay. Period. Cash flow. $50,000 out, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think I did 7 years. Cash flow is negative $50,000 on the front end. Then you get a little bit of money in, 8 grand on the first year, picks up some speed, $12,000 on the second year. And then you've got to put in $10,000. And then after you've put that in year three, then the real cash flow starts to crank. $25,000 comes to year four. And then you've got $30,000 in year five. And then you've got to put in $15,000 in year six. And year seven, you got $15,000 more. And year eight, you have $10,000 with a salvage value of $5,000. Okay? Let's get that in there. First things first, you cannot use internal rate of return for this. Your answer, you could actually put it in, and either one of these calculators would give you an answer, but it would be a meaningless answer. It would be what we call a spurious answer. You have a sign switch here, that's one. A sign switch here, that's two. A sign switch here, that's three. A sign switch here, that's four. A sign switch here, that's five. So what would happen is, if you were to actually try to calculate the net present value, one, two, three, four, one, two, this has four spurious net present values. None of them mean anything. And your calculator would give you one of them, depending on where it started to look. If it started to look right down real low, it'd probably find that first one. If it started looking very high, it'd probably find the last one. In the middle, it could find either one of these. None of them mean anything. That doesn't matter at all if you're doing a net present value. So in this case, I'm going to use an 8% on it, but first I'm going to put in the numbers here to get the net present value. And in this case, it's 50 grand, pause neg, oops, we got to hit cash flow first. Yes, we have to hit cash flow first. 50,000. Pause neg. And then we go down. This will be kind of a grind. 8,000. Down. Down. 12,000. Down. Down. Negative 10,000. Down, down, 25,000. This is way too much like boring. Okay, now, down 30,000. Down, down, and then 15,000 out. Whoops. 15,000. Bosneg, down, down, and then 15,000 in, down, down, and then 15,000 one last time. Nope, with the salvage value, yeah. 15, oh, 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 down, down. Now we're going to do the I over Y, 8% we'll use. Okay. Now compute the net present value. It's slightly positive. It's not majorly positive, but this is actually a decent project. At a discount rate of 8%, you make it happen. The problem is that the internal rate of return, I don't know if the Pearson will give us one or if it'll say error. Compute internal rate of return. Shoot. It looks to me like it found that one right there. Yep, found that one right there. It doesn't mean anything, though. It has no meaning whatsoever. Now, here's where you get to this thing where you find that there are still a lot of finance people out there who say, I want to use internal rate of return. That's the one that is the best. I learned that, and that's all I'm going to use. But how can you use that in a world where we've pretty much convinced everyone that this happens? This is not, the internal rate of return doesn't mean anything. Here's how they're doing it. Here's what they do. They will take all of the negative cash flows and they will bring those to the present using a discount rate that they pull out of their butts. Okay? And then they will take all of the positive cash flows and they will take those all to the last year. And collect them together as a future value. And then they'll take the future value of this lump sum and discount it back at the cost of capital that they've pulled out of the thin air and compare it, that value, to that value. You're saying, huh? Yeah, that's, watch. God, I wish I had made an easier cash flow to do this with. Okay, first thing first, we're going to say that the cost of capital is 7.5% for this company, 7.5%. So what we're going to do is we are going to bring back all of the negative cash flows to the current time. So we're going to have negative $50,000 plus negative $10,000 times 1.075 to the 1 to negative third power plus negative $15,000 times 1.075 to the negative, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 power, negative 6 power. And that will give us the present value of all of the negative cash flow. And I'm almost tempted to do this. You know what? I could do this on the Pearson calculator pretty fast. Reset. Let me try this. Cash flow. I would put... No, I can't do that. So I'll just have to use the brute force approach. 50,000, oops, wait, clear everything out. Okay, negative 50,000 plus negative 10,000, was that, yeah, times 1.075 to the negative third power plus negative 15,000 times 1.075 to the negative sixth power. Is that right? Yeah. Close the parentheses. Equals 67,769 negative. So, negative 67,769.03. That is the present value of the negative cash flows coming from this. Now, the next thing they're going to do is they are going to take the future value of all of the positives. Okay. Okay, so now. So that'd be 8,000 times 1.075 to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th power plus 12th. This is way too much like work. Times 1.075 to the 6th power plus 25,000 times 1.075 to the, okay, that one is 1, 2, 3, 4th power plus 15,000. Wait. That was 25, and then 30,000 times 1.075 to the 3rd power plus 15,000 times 1.075 to the 1st power plus $10,000. Now, I hope one of you already did this on the calculator while I was writing it. You didn't, did you? Do you see what a pain in the ass this is? I mean, with Excel, it's a little easier to do it. But, I mean, it's still going to be a real chew getting through this. So I'm going to do it real fast. For God's sake, someone keep going with me to make sure that I don't make a mistake. 8,000 times 1.075 to the 7th power plus 12,000 times 1.075 to the 6th power plus 25,000 times 1.075 to the 4th power plus 30,000 times 1.075 to the 3rd power, right? 3rd, plus 15,000 times 1.075 to the 1st power, which I really don't have to do that, plus, wait, 10,000 dollars equals $128,572.65. Okay, now we can end this mercifully. Watch how I'm going to do it. I'm going to say, all right, I have made this so it is a project that you put in $67,769 at the beginning, and then at the end of the 8th year, you get $128,572. Okay? Now we can calculate the internal rate of return. Watch. Cash flow zero would be -67,769.03. That's cash flow one, down. Did I put in that as a negative or not?
No.
Okay. Yes, I did. Okay, now. Watch this. I got a zero cash flow, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 periods of a zero cash flow. Down 7. And then in the 8th year, see, that's the problem is now it says CO2, but that's actually year 8. 128,572.65. And now we can compute the internal rate of return. My ass. Really? Oh, wait. I didn't put it in. It didn't take it. Okay, fine. Up. what the heck, what was that about? Oh, no, you, oh, no, 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 no. Okay, now, I'm just going to pay zero for seven periods. And then the second cash flow is going to be 128, 572.65 down one period. Right. Now, compute. Why did it put it in the third one? Okay, it's time for me to get butch. Okay? Zero, down one, zero, down, zero, down, zero, down, zero, down, zero, down, zero, down, zero, eight. I'll do it this way. One, I am not going to do all that work to get no answer. We could all leave here and have some scotch. Okay, there. Down. Now, compute internal rate of return. I got it. There's your MIRR, your modified internal rate of return, okay? That's all I have for you. Go home.